we were in India, we would always say, like, we wanted vindaloo, vindaloo.
Right,
And
yes.
they would look at us like, are you sure?
Yeah.
I think the chef was just like, they want vindaloo?
Yeah.
I'm going to give them vindaloo. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pass the Power with me, Paige Parker. I am delighted you're listening and maybe even watching on Spotify or our new YouTube channel. As we share conversations of hope with today's thought leaders, so together we may pass the power. For those of you who follow me on Instagram and TikTok, you know that I love food. I love sharing my favorite restaurants and my top spots. I'm passing the power with food. And today we're going to talk food extensively, and I welcome Sonia Shriram. She began a Singapore-based food startup in 2018. The company Shok Meats is the world's first to create cultivated crustaceans like shrimp, crab, and lobster. And I like to think about all of those people who have shellfish allergies, and now all of a sudden they're going to be able to eat the prawn or the shrimp.
Let me talk about that to you separately.
Oh, okay. I'm wrong. We're going to get to that too. I love that idea, but maybe it's not going to work. But I do know that the fact that we are cultivating the food, it is better for the environment. And also, we are not doing any slaughtering of animals, so that's a win-win. And you also acquired a cell-based red meat food company called Gaia Foods in 2021. And for a few years, Shok Meats was just kind of the rising star. Great press, fanfare, fundraising. But of late, the company has faced some challenges. And I think your team, even working 18, 20-hour days, has had a few challenges. So we're going to get there. We're going to discuss that. It's going to be a fascinating discussion on food, why it matters, and also the perseverance needed for a startup, especially when it's such a niche mandate. Welcome.
Thanks, Paige. Pleasure to be here. Yeah, a lot of details in that introduction.
Yeah, so tell me what I missed and correct me on the shellfish allergy.
Yeah, actually, the truth is, most people with shellfish allergies still cannot eat our product because what we are cultivating is real shrimp, real crab, and real lobster. It's not fake or artificial. So if you're allergic to shrimp, you will most probably be allergic to our shrimp as well. But having said that, crustacean allergies are different forms. Some of them are allergic to the main protein itself. Some of them are allergic just to the shell. Some of them are allergic to the metals in the water where the shrimp grows. So it depends what you're allergic to. They have to do a testing to like know which, for what they're allergic to. And then you sort of have to compare with what we have.
Right.
So at this point, I wouldn't put out a blanket statement.
Got it. If they're allergic to the actual shell, yours will be safe.
That's right. Exactly. Because we don't grow the shell.
But beyond that part of it, tell me more about you. What did I miss in the intro?
So I think what you covered in the intro was quite good because in a startup, there's always good days, but there are always bad days as well. In fact, bad days are more than good days. I think what I'd like to say about myself is I've been trained as a scientist, became an entrepreneur in the last couple of years. And I think that shows a lot of perseverance and resilience by itself. And honestly, I wasn't the person that I am today a couple of years ago. And a lot of people say, I can't believe it's you, right? I used to be this person who used to be in a lab coat, loved being just in the lab, in my own shell of sorts. And then it took a lot of time and energy and effort to break open that shell and come out and be the founder CEO that I am right now.
What did lead to that? Because you have a PhD in, what did you study?
Stem cells.
Yeah. Stem cells.
So I studied in stem cells. Always wanted to be a scientist, was always fascinated by how biology can solve problems in this world. And what got me to where I am today was just understanding that we could use stem cells to make food. And this was in 2014 when I came across the first burger that was made with stem cells. And I said, wow, that's interesting. I'm a vegetarian for ethical and environmental reasons. I've always wanted to eat meat or taste it and see what it's like. And majority of the population want to eat meat. And it's going to be very hard to convert 3-4 billion people into vegetarians and vegans. It's not happening, right? So how can we give the much beloved meat and seafood to everybody, but without killing animals, mm-hmm. without harming the environment? I think that, you know, got me through this obsession of using technology for food. And I think food, like you said, we all love it. Mm-hmm. We have to eat it twice or thrice a day. And it's omnipresent. It's important for all of us. So I just wanted to use science to get there. And I said, nobody else is doing it, so let me just start doing it.
Nobody else.
For shellfish. For
right.
shellfish.
Yeah. Nobody else in the world.
No, nobody else. Up until now, there's only one more company that's doing cultivated shrimp. But currently in the entire world, we're the only ones doing cultivated lobster and crab as well.
I first heard you speak maybe 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was at one of the food talks my mm-hmm. friend Trina organized.
Yep.
And I just remember being so wowed by you and your passion and you. Knowing that this is going to evolve and it right. is going to happen.
Right.
And I went home and I told my husband, I was like, you know, if when she goes public, I'm definitely buying because this is definitely going to take off. We'll get a little bit further in the podcast. We'll talk about some of the challenges going on, but I'd love to for us to talk about memorable moments with food.
Yeah.
And for me, I think there are so many because as we said, it's like the salve that binds us
yeah.
in relationships and our family and business entertainment. And sometimes it's not even about the best food
yeah.
because my children love when I cook mm-hmm. and my food is not the best food. It's not the most aesthetically beautiful.
Right.
It doesn't taste the best, but because it's mama's done it
right.
and therefore it becomes very important to them mm-hmm. and meaningful. They love my turkey lasagna. Mm-hmm. And another kind of memorable moment with food is when Jim and I got married mm-hmm. in the year 2000. We were driving around the world and we married in England. We're both American citizens, but we married in England. But the food that we served was from the South because we yeah. both grew up in the South of the US.
Right.
And so it was very important to have food, which was about us, served at that important event because I think that food is more than sustenance. It's about the memories of people and places.
Yes.
And then I think the funniest moment with food is when we were going around the world. We visited 116 countries. We were in Peru.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot where I was. And I picked up my soup bowl and drank it.
Yeah.
And everyone around the table, their chins just dropped to their knees like, oh my gosh, what is she doing? And then, because you just don't do that there.
Right.
And my husband... this is true love. He picked up his bowl and he drank too, so I wouldn't feel so terrible. But there's a right way to do food.
Right.
There are different, you know, with each culture, like what you can do, what's appropriate from place to place. And some people eat snake and some yeah. people eat tofu. Yeah. But food is way more than sustenance.
It's not going to happen in the next 5-10 years. It's going to take a couple of decades to get there and get into mass scale production. We just need to be patient. We need to be aware of it. And this is the food for the future
mm-hmm.
for our kids, our grandkids and so on. Not so much maybe for the people in this room, but then for sure the future generation.
So tell us a memorable moment.
For me, I think food in general. So I have traveled to over 50 countries and I hope to get to, you know, 100 in the coming years. And for me, I call myself an expert in quotes, but I know every vegetarian dish that's available in every country and I sort of recommend. So I think the most memorable was eating this vegetarian spicy paella in Spain,
mm-hmm.
in paella in Barcelona. And we were there for about 5 days, and I remember going thrice there to eat the same thing. So
wow, that was
it was
good.
Just opposite the sangria, you know. And then it is that, you know, that dish that brings comfort to you and taste. And, you know, I'm Indian. I love my spice and sour and sweet and all of that. And Spanish food is quite close to Indian food. So I think these are some of the memorable moments for me, for sure.
Well, when Jim and I were in India, I ate mostly vegetarian while
yeah.
we were there. We came in from Pakistan.
Yeah.
We were in Mumbai. We drove across to Delhi.
Right.
And it was, the food was so amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you live somewhere where being vegetarian is just kind of part of the culture, you have so many more options.
That was the thing for me when I moved to Singapore about 15 years ago. I came here and looked at all the food that was available in the hawker center. I was like, wow, that's a lot of variety, but a lot of meat and seafood as well. And I said, but in India, I've been so used to seeing vegetarian options in the same way that you would see all the meat and seafood here in Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of... You know, sometimes I was angry about it. I was happy about it. I was excited. All of the emotions that you can talk about. But I also used to wonder why the proteins that we have in India never made their way out of India sometimes or the Indian subcontinent. it's not just tofu or soy or just one type of pulse. We have about 100 types of pulses in India.
So what's your favorite dish?
Oh, my favorite dish is actually just a simple dal or like a pulse with a roti or with rice. Yes. So this is very home-cooked comfort food. And I travel a lot, like I mentioned, and whenever I come back home, I know I want that only. Yeah. So that's pretty much what it is.
Well, that sounds very good, but I love the saag paneer.
Oh, of course.
That to me is like, that's my favorite. Okay, so as we think and progress on this, we have to think about the challenges that we face with food. And I think mine are going to be a little different than yours because yours is going to be very company specific, I think. But as I get older, my metabolism's slowing down. Yep. So when I think about food, I have to be more disciplined in my diet. And I've gotten to a point now where sometimes I'm bored with food.
Yep.
And I find that at home, I eat a lot of salads and kind of sustenance. So that when I do have a special meal, it is more meaningful. Mm-hmm. I guess also for many people, food is an issue because they don't have enough.
Yep.
Or they're eating too much.
Yep.
Or they have food eating disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Or all of us have to deal with hormones.
Yes.
You know, pesticides,
yes.
antibiotics, all the things that they're putting into food now. And at least what you're doing is you're growing clean food.
Mm-hmm.
Which will help on that front. But I think we do have challenges when we think about food.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, I think when someone says, oh, this product is more organic or healthier than the other one, I'm like, are you sure? How do you know? It's just by the label, right? Mm-hmm. Are you going and testing it? Not really. At the end of the day, when it comes to food for people, it's about taste. Then comes price. Then comes nutrition. Then comes sustainability, impact, environment, all of that. And we have done so many studies to sort of understand that, right? At the end of the day, it's taste. It has to taste right. It has to, then comes metabolism, nutrition, and so on. But the first thing that people want is taste. So it's quite interesting when we have had chefs taste our cultivated products and say, it's too clean, it's too refined. And I said, what do you mean by that? And they said, well, it's grown in such a clean environment that it's 100% shrimp, but that's not what we get from an animal, right? So because it's mixed with the water, you know, whatever's in the water and all of that. So this may not suit everybody's palate. So we have to make it more familiar for the consumers. So what can we add to it to make it taste like the traditional product? So that was quite interesting when I heard it first and I said, okay, that's a different way of thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, that's so interesting because I know where I'm from in the South, I was a waitress in high school at a seafood restaurant and the seafood they were serving was not the best seafood. So I kind of understand. But like if you go to, like I'm thinking about Les Amis.
Yeah.
And when they serve a lobster, it's pretty pure.
So that's the thing. So the Michelin star and the premium chefs say this is fine for us. But when you go to like a mid-sized restaurant or not so premium sort of restaurant, they said this is too pure for us. So that's why we were looking to launch only in like Michelin premium restaurants initially, and then we'll see where things go with that. So we've had to go back a couple of steps because we face some challenges on scale up. And it's sort of like, you know, you can make a really good soup for four people, but when you make it for 400, it takes you a while to get there and you have to retrace a couple of steps. Pretty much that in a very large scale and in a biotech chemistry sort of a scale here. So cost-wise, I would say that isn't our biggest problem at this point. Even for the entire industry, it's not so much of a problem anymore. The problem or the challenge that we're facing right now is scale. Because we are talking about a multi-trillion dollar industry and all of us right now are producing a few kilograms every time we are producing. That's not even 0.0001%, right? So that's the challenge that we are facing.
So what's the solution?
The solution is time, patience and time and more investment into this
funding.
Industry. It doesn't have to be private funding. It can be government. It can be philanthropy. It can be research into universities to further our research at startups because we can license those technologies. I mean, one of the biggest challenge Shiok Meats has had is we have no playbook. We have no background information for crustaceans versus for red meat, which we are looking to commercialize faster. There's hundreds of years of research for that.
And then for those people listening who are entrepreneurs, can you talk a little bit? You talked about you had to really think about how you were going to proceed, whether you were going to close shop, how you're going to reprioritize. And I know you had to lay off some workers.
Yep.
I mean, how did that all go down?
This podcast is brought to you by Gush Cloud International. a global content and commerce management company powered by the creator economy. GushCloud works with me, Paige Parker, to co-produce, distribute, and license Pass the Power with Paige Parker to multi-platforms globally. I'm grateful to have GushCloud as my partner. Please visit www.gushcloud.com to learn more.
Went down pretty bad, as you can imagine, but I think I was expecting it. I was, I have a certain instinct as a person, and I sort of listen to that instinct. It may be right or wrong, but at the same time, I am answerable to all my shareholders, to my employees, to people around me, and to myself at the end of the day, right? Mm-hmm. I know every person that I've ever laid off or had them resign or terminated them was agonizing for me. I've spent sleepless nights over it. Hiring a person is not easy. Letting go of them is even harder. And for some reason, even though I say I'm not emotionally attached, I'm business, professional separate, personal separate, I'm human too, at the end of the day. And laying off over the last 6 months twice, we have halved our team, wasn't easy at all. Because we hired them through COVID, all via Zoom. I've run this company 3 years, out of the 5 years, I've run this company 3 years on COVID, during COVID, all online. Never met most of my scientists because I wasn't allowed to go into the lab in the office during the lockdowns and so on. It's hard, but at the same time, I think at the end of the day, I had to think whether you want this company to stay alive with 10 people or you want it to die in 6 months with 60 people, right? So the whole idea of this industry is to actually work with these farmers and food industries or the factory farms that are out there. The idea is how can we enable them with a better technology rather than the current technology that they're using. So this is being done in reality right now in the Netherlands, where companies like us have partnered with about 3 farmers and they've set aside 5% of their land to set up a cultivated farm. And one of the biggest worries of these farmers was that whether they had to learn biotechnology, right? But the idea is that we make it a fully automated line or a processing line where they just press a button and in a couple of weeks they get the meat outside instead of rearing the animals and then processing them for meat. So we are getting there slowly, steadily. But I think in 25 years, we should have a couple of large farms that are using our technology to get there.
And would that mean that you're selling them the technology and that's how you're going to make your money?
That's right. So for Shiok Meats, yes, that's the business model. I can't speak for the rest of the companies, but for us, our business model from day one has been licensing out the technology. So we will launch the product initially in a restaurant, but that's more for consumer buy-in and for the industry to understand that this can be a B2C product. But ours has always been licensing out the technology.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. Then it's going to be about convincing the farmers not to be left behind.
Yes, the farmers. And I would say it's going to take a lot of time to convince the farmers. There are nonprofits like Respect Farms and the government sort of doing that for us. What we specifically do right now is partner with food companies, like the larger food companies that are out there in Japan and Switzerland and Germany and so on. And we tell them, they understand technology a little better, right? Mm-hmm. So, and it's easier for them to adapt and adopt what we are doing. So we work with them for them to license our technology.
Another interview I watched, you were talking about how you were hoping to get the cost of shrimp down to $50 per
kilogram. Yes.
Will people pay that?
$50 per kilogram at this point in a premium restaurant, maybe yes, but eventually no. So the ultimate idea is to bring it down to about $10 a kilogram. And our projections at this point show that we can get to $10 as long as we scale the technology. Right. We're not there yet.
Yeah. And that's 20 years down the road.
So I would say no, actually the $10 per kilogram we are predicting should be in the next 5 to 7 years, as long as we are able to license out the technology and they're able to scale it to a certain scale per se.
And are your shareholders patient?
I would say majority of them are. The first thing my shareholders asked me was, how are you? Have you slept? Have you eaten? Are you okay? And I said, wow, okay. There's a human side to this as well. Because you know what? I've heard this from a lot of founder CEOs. People say that nobody really asks them how they are doing and whether they are okay as a person, because nobody sees them as a person. We are seen as a business entity. We are seen as an ROI. We are seen as somebody that's disrupting, innovating, but we aren't seen as a human being. So when my shareholders asked me that question, I was like, wow, okay. Now I feel that I have taken money from the right people. And they are here to back me and they will back me for the long run. And they in fact said, it's fine. Go leaner if you want. We are here to support you. We believe you can achieve what you have set out to. So let's try to work together to make that happen.
So the takeaway for the young entrepreneur out there is to make sure your investors kind of drink your Kool-Aid and get your vibe so that...
Yes, but I also will say that a takeaway is be ready for everything, but also have a good support system around you, be it family, friends, investors, team, and don't expect 100% of them to be supportive of you always. In fact, only expect about 1/3 to be supportive. But that 1/3 will support you always, right? That's important. So remember to have that 3 people or 30 people around you mm-hmm. that will support you. And go with your instincts, honestly. Just keep...
Okay, so we're going to talk about hot takes.
Yeah.
And I actually have 5.
Okay.
So I've got a list of 5 here. And the first is, and this is... I was telling my daughter about it and she's like, Mama, it's not a takeaway, but a hot take. But I was like, I like this. So it's that when you find Prata, find the coin Prata. Because I think, I don't know what it is about the fact that it's smaller than the usual disc size. It just tastes better. And my friend, I was talking about Trina earlier. Mm-hmm. She introduced me and she swears by Prata Alley at Clementi. And so I love the coin Prata. I think the best donuts in Singapore are from Burnt Ends Bakery.
Mm-hmm.
They've got passion fruit, Milo dinosaur, pandan. My favorite is a vanilla cream.
Mm-hmm.
They are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
A plain one is $4. I think mm-hmm. the flavored ones are like $5.
Right.
But they're big enough that you can, I mean, they're pretty big, so mm-hmm. you can share and just think of it as a luxury to enjoy. And then I love the all-natural vegan ice cream from Kind Cones.
Okay.
They have a keto avocado coconut, mm-hmm. which is delicious. Mm-hmm. They've got yummy chocolate sorbet. And also I talked a lot about salads before, and every other week I have a delivery of greens from Bountiful. And this is all of it's grown in Singapore in a little indoor vertical farm.
Right.
And it's freshly harvested. There's no pesticides or no chemicals on it. And it's sold on a website which is called Backyard Fresh. We'll put a link in the bio for everybody. And they bring together the small scale handmade delights and things from local farmers. So I really love Backyard Fresh. And the butterhead lettuce is out of this world. I don't know what they do, but it's just the best. And number 5 for me is that TikTok is my new cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
And I think TikTok gets a bad rap. There's lots of good things happening on it. And I get so many delicious recipes on soups and salads and like healthy, clean food. And it's all on TikTok.
Nice. Yeah. I got so addicted to TikTok that I had to uninstall it from my phone. Maybe I'll get back to it at some point.
Okay, yeah. So tell us your hot take with food.
My hot takes with food. So I love this restaurant called Boneless Kitchen, and it serves vegetarian Korean food. And why I remember this so well is during the pandemic, during the lockdown, we started watching K-drama as a family. And after watching a couple of episodes, we were like, I want Korean food, right? Like now. And then I was like, but veg Korean food is very hard to find. It's mostly meat.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, exactly, right? And then I just Googled vegetarian Korean food in Singapore and I found this restaurant. And then we went, we ordered from them, of course, and it was so good. It's so good. They have a branch actually very close to where we are as well, like in the One North area, and it's pretty good. So that's that. Next is Japanese food. I have always wanted to try Japanese food and I find Koma to be really good. They have a lot of options of Japanese. And there's a full Japanese vegetarian restaurant called Herbivore in Fortune Center. So that's my go-to place.
Mm-hmm.
Third is any good bowl of ramen, be it at home, be it anywhere. I think it's comfort food for me and the spice and the heat is what I like. Fourth is... actually any home-cooked food.
Mm-hmm.
And other than the dal and the roti, my hot take is something called savory yogurt rice. And it's eaten in the southern part of India, which where I come from. So it's your natural unsweetened yogurt mixed with your plain rice, basmati or whatever it is. And then you temper it with mustard and spices and curry leaves and all of that.
That sounds so yummy.
And you actually eat it with pickle, like on the side. So it's a comfort food, but also it's an indulgent. And like if you go to Komala's or one of these South Indian restaurants, you'll get it in Singapore. And fifth, I think food is just my guilty pleasure of figuring out what's the vegetarian food in any country that I go to and seeing if it's good, and whether I'd recommend it to a friend who's also a vegetarian who wants to travel. So I would say these are my hot takes on food.
Got it. And I just thought of one more. Original Sin.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I love their, yeah. I think it's called The Magic Mushroom.
Yes.
When I was pregnant with B, who's now 15, mm-hmm. That was like, that's all I wanted. I went once a week to have the Magic Mushroom. It was so, so, so delicious. That's, I mean, good. It's still there.
Yeah.
And I really love that restaurant. Yeah. And when you were talking about the heat.
Yeah.
my husband and I both grew up in small towns in the South. And our mothers were, they cooked pretty bland food. Mm-hmm. But we both love spice. So right. We think now we're making up for all the blandness that we had as children. But when we were in India, we would always say, like, we wanted vindaloo.
Right,
and
yes.
they would look at us like, are you sure?
Yeah. I've had people, like, when I go to Thailand, they ask me, you want the Thai spicy or the normal spicy? Similarly, in India, they actually ask, do you want the Indian spicy or, like, the normal spicy? I would say stick to the normal spice.
Yeah.
Even I can't do the Indian spice anymore. As I age, you talked about metabolism. I'm talking about heartburn, honestly.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, too much spice is not getting down well nowadays. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. I love your hot takes there. So my question for you is, what if this all goes south?
I think about it every day. I mean, I'm not kidding. If it goes down, I would say I'm really proud of what we have done, and we tried, and it is what it is. But when you do a startup, you know only 10% of it succeeds. And it's the best experience I've ever had in my life.
Okay, this is completely nothing to do with food. Sure. But what about, because we hear so much on stem cells with rejuvenating the body.
Yeah.
Do you have a take on that? Or it's?
Oh, I totally believe in it, but I don't believe when somebody tells me there's live stem cells in your cream.
Oh, I'm, we like, know that's absolutely,
I'm like, huh?
BS.
Yeah, exactly, right? I do believe in the secretions of stem cells giving you better skin, better hair, better. I believe in injecting stem cells into your knees, for example, if those are live stem cells, yes. Right? So I do believe in the power of stem cells, but if it's used in the right way. And I also believe in
What's the wrong way?
The wrong way is telling that you have live stem cells in your skincare cream,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so,
no.
Yeah. And I do believe in a person's own stem cells to actually rejuvenate. So there are therapies where you take out your own stem cells and then the company would do something on the stem cells. In fact, what they do is rejuvenate them or grow them a little bit more. And then they inject it back into the body. I definitely believe in that. Yeah.
Okay, your question for me?
My question for you is... what do you want for your kids as you move forward in terms of food? Like in terms of food and sustainability, what do you think that they should have when they grow up?
Well, I know because my, both of my daughters, living in Singapore, I paid crazy sums for mm-hmm. organic milk.
Right.
No hormones, no nitrates and all of the meats and that kind of stuff. And it's incredibly expensive to do it. But I thought it's important because now girls are beginning their cycles earlier. Okay. Because of all the hormones and everything that they're drinking through milk and they're taking in the meat. So, I mean, I think we have to be, especially if we can afford to give them what is clean.
Right.
I think that's incredibly important. Right. So, and I think they're conscious of that. I think they're certainly, like wastage is something we really mm-hmm. talk about a lot at the house.
Yep.
And we love to share mm-hmm. if we have too much. And... I guess just eating clean.
That's the
most important thing.
I think it's the small steps that count. It's, you don't have to be a savior of the planet. You can just avoid wasting food. And I think that's a big step. It's a small step, but it's a big outcome at the end of the day. So,
yeah. And what about you? What do you think a parent should be thinking about for...
For me, I don't want my kids to, I don't want to tell them what to do and what to choose, but I want to give them information on what it is. For example, my son eats meat. I don't. My son and my husband eat meat. But I don't try to scare him by saying, oh, it comes from a dead chicken, you know, not like that. But I ask him questions like, do you know where it comes from? And initially he's 10, but when he was 5, he used to tell me it comes from the supermarket shelf, right? And then his school took him to a goat farm and to a chicken farm, and then he understood where it comes from. And then he said, maybe I shouldn't eat so much meat because it kills animals, but it tastes so good. Mm. And I said, it's fine. I'm not telling you to stop eating, but maybe reduce if you can. So then he said, okay, I won't eat it on certain days of the week. And he's been following that. So it's sort of providing him with information. And now I have a daughter as well. So just providing them with information on what it is. And then they can make their choices.
We have Meatless Monday at my house.
Yes.
For sure. And when we lived in New York and Hilton was going to a school there, I led a fundraiser so that we could build kind of a farm on the roof of the building. Yeah. Because so many New Yorker kids have never seen anything grow.
Yeah.
You ask them, like, when you said it's from the supermarket, they're like, where do you get your green beans? Yeah. Oh, they're at the supermarket. Yeah. So before we close, is there anything else you want to share? Is there anything we didn't cover?
I think overall, you know, with whatever has been happening in the last couple of months, I would just ask everybody to be kind and nice and think about the other person before they say anything. Social media and, you know, cyberbullying can be really hurtful to a lot of people, even a very resilient person like me. And it affects everybody around me, my family, my friends, my employees, the team, and all of it. And overall, yes, we are in a very tough, novel industry. So just be patient. Give us a chance to make some mistakes. It's okay. I think we learn from our mistakes. But the ultimate vision is that we provide food with a better source and a more sustainable source. And that's what I'm here for. And I hope that I'm able to achieve that.
Well said. Is the toxicity coming on TikTok or Instagram?
Actually, on anonymous job websites.
Oh. Mm. Yeah.
Not so much on social media yet. Right. I would just put it there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, but it's amazing how people feel when it is anonymous.
Yeah.
And they don't have to put kind of voice and face to the message. So be kind.
Yeah.
But I've wanted to have you on for so long since I saw you. I mean, you've been on my list and I know you're traveling and busy. So I'm very grateful for you to come and spend the time and educate us a little bit on.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me here. And it's been a pleasure. Yeah.
So that wraps another episode of Pass the Power with me, Paige Parker. I'm so glad you're along with us. And I hope that you will message me and let me know who you'd like to come on with me, how we can do this better, so we can keep on keeping on passing the power one episode at a time.